I'm Marco Werman. You're with The World. We're a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH here in Boston. Every country has an ugly side to its history. So it is with Australia and its so-called stolen generation. The name comes from the half-century-long policy of taking Aboriginal children from their homes and placing them with white families. The practice stopped in the 1970s, but now some Aboriginal people are wondering if it's starting up again. This time they're talking about social service workers removing children from their homes. The government says they're dealing with violence and abuse within these families, but some say the government is risking another stolen generation. Teapot Fernandez has our story from the city of Alice Springs.
Hello, I'm Shirlene Campbell. I'm a Central Australian mother of five.
Campbell has a shy smile, and she grips her cup of tea tightly as we talk.
I watch domestic violence all the time. If it's not my mum and dad, it would be our family members.
And then it happened to her.
Yep, I was a victim.
Physical and verbal abuse from her husband.
Well, with me going through domestic violence myself, at the end of the day, if you're having violence and at the end of the day, it can break up families and it's not a good thing. Pretty daunting for the kids as well.
One horrific case of family violence made national headlines earlier this year when a two-year-old Aboriginal girl was raped in her home.
Residents are also asking questions about how the child was allowed to remain in a house they say was well known to police and child protection agencies. "We're devastated and angry," one resident told Sky News. "If I could have, I would have stolen that child myself."
It's a loaded issue here. Did you catch that the resident wanted to steal the child to keep her safe? That's a blunt reference to a shameful part of white Australia's treatment of Aboriginal people when authorities literally did steal Aboriginal children and put them in group homes or place them with white families. In 2008, the Prime Minister issued a national apology to what's called the stolen generation. Yet a case like the rape of the toddler led even some Aboriginal leaders to call for more aggressive actions in removing children from violent homes. Here's an Aboriginal councilwoman from Alice Springs, Jacinta Price, talking to Sky News Australia soon after the rape.
"This situation has become really quite bad, and, you know, this stigma around a second stolen generation, I believe, is one of the main reasons why these children are faced with what they're faced with, because we haven't intervened when we should have to save the lives of these children."
"I feel angry and sad, you know, that all these, not all Aboriginal people are like that."
Wiona Palmer is from an Aboriginal community near Alice Springs.
"You can't just say that Aboriginal people are violent and, you know, can't look after their children. We know how to grow our kids up."
As Palmer and I chat, her six-year-old daughter is curious about my microphone, so I hand it to her and she Hello. Points it at her own grandmother.
"What's your name?"
"Lakayla."
"And what's the other little school you go to?"
"Children's Ground."
Lakayla's grandmother, Felicity Hayes, is a big part of her life. She helps teach Lakayla her mother tongues.
"How do you say that in Aranda?"
"Mbakanaala."
"She speaks three languages. She speaks English, Western Aranda and Pijinjara."
Learning language and culture is key to what Palmer means when she says we know how to grow our kids up.
"We're worried about our young children too when they get taken away from us, because we don't know what could happen to them behind closed doors."
Palmer has had first-hand experience. Authorities removed her niece and nephew due to family violence in the home a decade ago. They took her nephew hundreds of miles away and placed him in another state.
"And he was staying in a farm for 9 years.
How did you find him?
"He found us. He had to run away because of what was happening to him behind closed doors. So he decided to make a run because they would say bad things to him and lock him up in the bedrooms and say that his family doesn't exist, that he was just a boy that got taken away from a drunken person."
They managed to get custody of his sister and raise her, but it's been traumatizing for all of them, even now that they have their nephew back. I wanted to ask the Department of Family and Community Services about the case, but they declined to talk to me.
"All Aboriginal communities affirm that our kids have to be safe."
Tim Ireland heads the largest Aboriginal child protection agency in the state of New South Wales.
"When you look at the options that are available to Aboriginal women experiencing domestic violence, really over the years, those options have been cut down. I mean, in the past, we would have women's refuges and shelters and refuges for families, so women with children.
Those shelters do exist, but few are run by Aboriginal communities, and Island says a lot of women just don't trust them. What they get instead, according to Island, is
government pulling out a big stick and saying, well, you've reported this now, we're going to penalise you by removing your partner and locking them away and doing all that, and then also taking your kids because you couldn't keep them safe. That's the wrong response.
The government's numbers show that Aboriginal children are much more likely to be removed from their families than non-Indigenous kids. And there's been a big spike in those numbers. They've almost doubled over the past decade.
The policies of the past that led to the stolen generation are being played out in Australia, so using a child protection kind of lens.
In the Northern Territory, the state where the toddler was raped, it's even higher. The number of children removed has tripled in the past decade.
There's definitely overrepresentation of Aboriginal children entering into the child protection system.
Colleen Gwynne is the Children's Commissioner of the Northern Territory. Her job?
I'm employed by government to oversee all services to vulnerable children.
So I asked her why there's been such a dramatic increase of Aboriginal children removed in her state, when the number of non-Indigenous children removed has remained relatively stable.
My view is that that's directly attributed to a number of determinants such as poverty, overcrowding, drug and alcohol misuse, violence. It's not a quick fix. These are issues that will take many, many years to overcome.
I'm in a park in Alice Springs, a Sunday picnic with a group of women, Aboriginal grandmothers. They're starting to come together to demand that their Indigenous children be kept within larger family networks.
Hello, my name is Sabella Kwarai Turner in Central Australia, Alice Springs.
Turner belongs to the local chapter of Grandmothers Against Removals.
You know, I've had a lot of families removed from my family with that family conferencing, and it's still happening today.
The law requires social service workers to make every attempt to place Aboriginal children in a family network. But Turner and other women here tell me they were never asked to take in a grandchild or a nephew. Children's Commissioner Colleen Gwynne says they're aware that at times they could be doing a better job of this. Isabel Turner has this suggestion.
Look, if they don't know how to do their job, these children family services, they should get people like us grandmothers to do their job, you know, or work together.
But it's not all bleak, I'm told, by Charlene Campbell, the mother we met at the beginning of the story. We're at an all-day Australian rules football tournament in Alice Springs. She has four sons and all play football. They're really good too. Campbell did not want her kids to grow up in a violent home, and she didn't want to risk losing them. She knew she had to do something to keep her family together. So she enlisted the women in her family to help her make her husband see how wrong his violent behaviour was.
My husband actually turned things around knowing that I needed his support as well.
Campbell is part of a women's group called Tunnanjira that's pushing local and federal government to fund family support services and support Aboriginal mothers so they can end the cycle of violence. She says her husband has seen the light. Now he goes around talking to other men.
He goes out to the communities talking about domestic violence. You know, men don't hit their partners. They're not real men if they do that. Real men stand up and support their wives. Real men always be equal with the partner.
One mother can't do it alone, Campbell says, so she and other community organisers are building the support networks so other families can stay together too. For The World, Deepa Fernandes, Alice Springs, Australia.
We have photos of those women in Deepa's story and of life in Alice Springs. Find them at theworld.org. Tomorrow, Deepa brings us a story of another group of Aboriginal women whose ancient wisdom is bringing modern land management to the outback.